You're listening to The Happiness Hub, part of the Redshift Community Podcast Network, with me, Liz Parkin.
And me, Kedron Elliott. Every episode, we'll share top tips on how to get happy and stay happy. So listen in, get involved, and be happy. Hello, you're listening to The Happiness Hub with me, Kedron Elliott, and my co-host,
Liz Parkin.
Hiya, Liz.
Hello, Kedron. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Happy New Year. I know
Happy
we've spoken.
Yeah, I know. It's here we are. We're recording this on the 7th of the first week of the year, aren't we? So we've had a whole week of this year. What a week it's been. Normally, it's kind of like, you know, just dwindling into the new year, blah blah blah, but I think you could safely say we've been quite busy, haven't we, with
you're always busy, but today we have been very busy with our Nantwich buddies, making sure that everybody's been looked after in Nantwich, haven't we?
Yeah, indeed. Well, I think the buddies have been fantastic. Talk about stepping up on New Year's Day. I finally had the go ahead from the lady Natalie at the NHS about what days of the week the COVID vaccines were going to start at the Civic. And we'd been sort of prepping ourselves prior to Christmas and everything. But she said, yeah, it'll be a 7-day in advance notice. So on New Year's Day, we got the nod. And by, I think, 11 p.m. New Year's Day night, we had, I think it's 16 people we've scheduled to go and support the get vaccinations at the Civic, which have started today and continue tomorrow. So thank you very, very, very much to all the buddies that have stepped up and taken part in that. And we've actually got a really nice team of about 30 buddy vaccination supporters now. So yeah, bring it on. Next week, well, this week, by the time this podcast goes out, it'll be this week. They are vaccinating on Wednesday and Thursday of the coming week. So we'll have another round of volunteers, and it's going to go through for, I think, at least 6 weeks. They're planning to be there 2 days a week.
I wonder how many people they've done today then, because this was the first day, wasn't it? And we had people helping in the morning and the afternoon.
Yeah, I was going to try and find that information out, actually. I'm sure somebody would have been down, I bet Nantwich News or the Chronicle have been down at the centre finding out that sort of information. So it should be on Facebook later on. But I've heard from some of the buddies. They said it's been really well organised and lots of very happy people to be getting their vaccinations. And bless them, they've been wrapped up warm because a lot of them have been doing car parking today. The Civic car park has been sort of handed over so that it makes it easy for older people to come and go and get their jabs. But my word, it's been cold. We've been in our homes on Zoom all day working together, haven't we? But
well, I sat here this afternoon watching the snow come down at about 3 o'clock.
Oh, we haven't. You're in Congleton. We've not had snow, but we had a little bit of sleety rain horribleness. It looks nice. I'm just glad I'm not out in it. So anyway, there we go. And also on the subject of buddies, because lockdown has obviously come upon us again, we've made a start on calling all our past clients. So if there is anybody listening that maybe we've supported in the past, maybe you've got a family member that perhaps could need a little bit of support from shopping, prescription collecting, that kind of thing, just give us a call, because we don't want older people going out in this weather. It's really slippery out there. It's cold. We are more than happy to help. Even if it is just a one-off, it's absolutely fine. To contact us, you do need to go through the Cheshire's phone number, which is 0300 123 5034. And you get through to People Helping People, the team there at Cheshire's, and then they'll divert the request out to us here in Nantwich if it's a Nantwich-based inquiry, and indeed to other parts of Cheshire's if you're not in the Nantwich area. So that's it, really. Yeah, it's been a good start to the week for me. But we've got our first guest on the call with us any minute now. So what else have you been up to, Keds?
I've sent my assignment off. So I know you were asking me about that, weren't you? So there was a bit of a to and froing of emails because the centre was closed for marking it. And then there was some kerfuffle about whether I had to send it or my tutors had to send it. So in the end, my tutor said, just to cover all bases, you email them, I'll email them and print it all off and stick it in the post. So I think it was the day, New Year's Day, sat on the floor printing all my stuff up, thumping my printer that's on its last legs is going to be able to cope with printing off this, what was it, 56 page document. It managed it, thank God for that. And I got an email, I think on the first day that we're back on the 4th of January, saying we've received your portfolio, just let you know, and we sent it off for marking. So now I've just got everything crossed. Because I'm still not 100% confident that it's okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine. So that's how many years work so far?
I think like 6 years. Yeah, because I've been doing it part-time while I've been working full-time. And I think I had a bit of a gap between doing my first year open university before doing the second year in counselling. So, oh yeah, and then having my placement and seeing clients and things. So yeah, 6 years.
Good stuff. Well, our guest is from the Samaritan, so we'll be I'm sure we'll be grilling him about all the things you could do as a Samaritan and maybe with your counselling hat on as well. Right then, well, I think we'll go and introduce our guest, shall we?
Yes, let's do that. So should we introduce our second series, because this is the second series of the Happiness Hub, and we're going to be talking to people from a lot of local mental health charities so people can find out a little bit more about the services that they offer and how to get in contact with them. So we've got a few people lined up from various different charities over the next few weeks, haven't we?
We sure have, yeah. We've got a really, I feel like we've now kind of, we've worked out what we've doing with this podcast. We've had lots of great interviews over the last 10 weeks and talked to loads of different people, but now we've got a bit of structure to it.
So our first guest to kick off our second series is Simon Kaufman, and Simon is a fundraiser for the Samaritans in Crewe, and he's lived in Nantwich for 18 years and been a Samaritan volunteer for 7. So Simon, lovely to have you with us on the podcast today. Sorry we couldn't meet in person. How are you doing today?
It's nice to meet you, Kedron. Yeah, unfortunately, given the current circumstances, we weren't able to meet face to face. I'm fine, thank you. I'm ensconced in a spare bedroom in my house, like millions of people across the UK, no doubt, at the moment. And I'm fine. Had a quiet Christmas and back into the swing of work.
So quiet Christmas and quiet New Year?
Yeah, I've got 2 teenage kids. One of my son is back from university. He was in his second year of studies at uni, and unfortunately, given the announcements recently, he probably won't be back for a while. And my daughter is in the final year of Brian Lee's doing GCSEs this year. So, of course, we had the news about having to not coming back to school for some time, and GCSEs not happening this year. So they're both kind of learning online through Teams.
Yeah.
But they've taken everything in their stride. And I guess having older kids, it hasn't been as challenging as perhaps just for some people. I have colleagues who have younger children, and it can be a bit of a challenge trying to keep kids stimulated and occupied, you know, whilst you're trying to work. But we're doing okay, and we had did a couple of nice walks over Christmas, you know, just to sort of walk off the Christmas turkey and the booze. And yeah, we're sort of trying to take everything in its stride and see how things pan out over the next few months for us all.
Yeah,
I think that's like you say about the older children being able to work. You know, that's a massive stress that they do off. They can kind of deal with that kind of stuff, but some families are really, really struggling, and particularly this kind of third lockdown, where I suppose it came out of a bit of a bolt for the blue from some people, but we know people who have got 3 kids at home in 3 different year groups, all needing to access a computer, while mum and dad need to also work online as well. So bandwidth is a problem, devices is a problem, concentration is a problem, and it's just, it's hitting a lot of people very hard this time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So Simon, tell us a little bit more about you volunteering at Samaritans. So how did it all start?
So about 7 years ago, I was, I'll tell you what happened exactly. I was returning home from a night out, and I was walking along Mill Island in Nantwich, and I saw a man, and he was in a lot of emotional distress, and he was basically trying to hang himself with his coat. He was crying, he was very upset, and I just walked up to him, and he told me what about his story. He was homeless. He was living in his car. He had no money. He was unemployed. He had no family. And I just basically said, look, it sounds like you're going through a really tough time. Is there anything I can do? He said, no, I'll be okay. And I was a bit worried about it, but he kind of said that he would be okay. Anyway, I carried on walking and I turned back and he'd gone. And I thought, well, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with this guy. And I actually phoned the police, and I found out subsequently that he'd been sectioned for one night. The local police were able to find him quite quickly within the local area, and I think he'd gone home the next day. So it got me thinking about mental health. It got me thinking about what had driven this man to be in such a state of despair, you know, what sort of kind of circumstances had led him to that point. And it got me thinking about what can I do to help people in that situation. And I went online and I found out about Crewe Samaritans, and I went to an information evening. when I found out a little bit more about what's involved in being a Samaritan. I had an interview, went through the selection process, and that's when I became a volunteer. So the catalyst for that was seeing this poor man in a lot of distress and a lot of despair. And I kind of thought, I'd like to put something back into society and help people in that situation.
Brilliant. Thank you. Yeah.
That just that one pivotal time. Had prior to seeing that chap in Mill Island, had you had any awareness of mental health or people's struggles or your own personal struggles, or was it literally just that defining point?
I had a period myself of difficult mental health. I had some work-related issues and difficulties about 2 or 3 years before that, where I was off sick myself with depression, and it was a very difficult time. And I'd actually been hospitalised. People know about it. I don't mind talking about it. I came through it though, and my employer HMRC, there's a lot more interest now and resources thrown, I think, at mental health, and I think it's much higher profile than it was. Lots been done to reduce the stigma of mental health. So my kind of awareness was from generated to a certain extent from my own personal experiences, and I think it was just this particular incident that I saw this man, which was kind of the catalyst for me to try and do something about it and to see if I could, where I could help and contribute perhaps to supporting people who are in a similar situation.
So there might be a few people listening that might not still know who the Samaritans are and what they do. So if somebody didn't know and it was the first time they heard of them, who are Samaritans and what sort of services do you offer to people?
Okay, so Samaritans is a charity. So we, we're funded entirely by donations. And essentially, we do two things. We're a listening service. And we provide emotional support to people. And that's through two ways. That's through our phone number. So we have a free number, 116 123. You can phone that number from anywhere in the UK, a landline or mobile, or you can email us through jo@samaritans.org. And essentially, we're at the end of the line and we will listen to people who are going through a difficult time in their lives. So that could be bereavement, it could be mental health issues, and it could be money worries, the COVID situation. Are people just having a bad time, in their work, in their relationships, or whatever? You pick up the phone and you speak to a Samaritans volunteer, and we're there to listen. We're not trained counsellors, although some of us have got a background in that. We don't see our role as providing advice or telling people what to do. Mm-hmm. It's essentially about giving and offering callers a safe space to talk about their problems and to talk through their feelings and emotions, and in confidence, in a non-judgmental way, we will listen and we'll offer for emotional support to those individuals. And it's probably it's the only talk charity I know of. You were talking earlier about mental health agencies and resources. It's one of the few charities that has a 24/7 helpline. So if somebody wants to phone us up at 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning, or 11 o'clock on a Wednesday evening, there will always be a volunteer. We do offer a 24/7 service.
I think that's really important, because mental health doesn't work 9 to 5, does it?
And some of
the times that you've mentioned there is probably when people might need somebody to talk to the most at early hours in the morning or at the weekend. It's vital.
Absolutely. That's totally true, Kendra. And no two calls are the same. So you literally don't know what the next call is going to be. We talk to people from all backgrounds. We talk to prisoners. Prisoners are able to phone Samaritans, and it's often a good release for them because they're frustrated and angry about their situation, and they don't have anybody else. As you can imagine, mental health provision in prisons is very, very overstretched. And prisons also offer a listener service, so prisoners themselves can be trained to be Samaritans volunteers and to help prisoners. We get calls from people living on their own who perhaps no immediate family or friends around. We get calls from people who have profound mental health problems living in sheltered accommodation or in special accommodation for people with mental health problems. Mm-hmm. And, in quotation marks, normal people, people who are just having a difficult time in their lives. So we have a full range of callers from all sorts of walks of life and backgrounds. And with our email service, the email service is actually known across the world. So we offer email counselling as well. And it's common to get emails from people in the United States, Australia, India, Japan, Far East. So we do have a global reach, certainly in terms of our email service.
Gosh, that's incredible.
I know.
Presumably you're you're crew based, but you take calls nationally then, do you? Not through, you, it's not a local person that's likely calling you.
That's correct. So basically our telephony platform, it's like a call routing. So if somebody phones Samaritans, what will happen is that call will go to the next available branch. So we have 200 branches open across the UK at any one time. So I'll get a call from anyone. I like to think I'm okay at accents. So it could be, I could get somebody from Scotland, somebody from Wales, somebody from London. So yeah, you do literally get calls from all over the UK, and it's whichever branch is available at that time will take the next call.
With the situation now with lockdown, am I right in thinking normally you would be in a call centre together? Is that still the case, or are you working remotely?
Yes, basically we have what we call an ops room, an operations room. So every Samaritans branch, if you can imagine a Samaritans branch, imagine an office, an open plan office with either two or three workstations. So you'll have a laptop, and you'll have, like I'm talking to you, you'll have somebody with headphones, wireless headphones. So we have, all branches have had COVID risk assessments. So we maintain social distancing in the branches so that we can come in. Some volunteers like to wear masks, and we have vigorous COVID hygiene regime. So we disinfect all surfaces before and after duties. What we have stopped doing, to answer your question, is face-to-face. Because of course we, you know, all branches offer a face-to-face service, so somebody can knock on the door, you know, and come in and speak to a Samaritans volunteer. So unfortunately, we're unable to provide that. So yes, at the moment our service is provided through our branches. We are looking to trial instant messaging, and we do have the technology, or we're developing the technology for providing remote service, but we think that the current model where you have two volunteers working side by side is really helpful, because then that gives the volunteers an opportunity to discuss calls between them, between themselves, and get some support if they need it during the duty.
So is there support if you've got somebody who, for instance, was literally saying to you on the end of the phone they're going to take their own life? How do you deal with that?
Yeah. Okay, that's a good question. So we have, as Samaritans, our vision is to prevent people from, you know, is to reduce suicide, but we also believe in self-determination. And what that essentially means is that we respect people's decisions about what they want to do with their future, with their lives. So we won't say to somebody, for instance, oh, you mustn't kill yourself, don't kill yourself, think about the impact on your family, you mustn't kill yourself. We might say something like, what other options, what's brought you to this place in your life, what's been happening in your life that's brought you here, and often you will find that the mere act of talking to somebody can often calm them down. There have been occasions where we were asked to call emergency services, and basically we will only do that under quite limited circumstances where, you know, they provide full information to us. So we believe in self-determination, which again is this policy of respecting people's decisions. There's a bit of a myth about Samaritans. We do take calls from people who do feel suicidal, and the suicidal feeling is a manifestation or a reflection of their sort of the distress they're in. But the vast majority of calls are not what I would call from people who are, you know, who are suicidal. So if somebody does ring in and said, look, I'm standing by the bridge, by the Humber Bridge, I want to throw myself into the water. You know, we will talk to that individual. I'll ask them to talk about what's brought them to that place, what experiences they've had recently, what they're feeling. You know, Samaritans is all about feelings and emotions and exploring those. And often that helps to give that individual a moment's reflection about the situation that they're in. So if anybody is feeling suicidal, you know, we would say, please phone Samaritans, and you will hopefully find that speaking to somebody, a supportive person who can show empathy and understanding and not judge you, maybe will help you to sort of think through what you want to do, what your next steps are. But we would never actually say to somebody, you mustn't kill yourself, because we don't feel that is our role to do that. We don't see ourselves as having that sort of role. We're more around exploring and sharing thoughts and feelings and giving that individual the time and the space and the opportunity to reflect on their thoughts and their feelings and what's happened to them. And it's just the act of having a conversation can be so helpful. Many calls that I take and that my fellow volunteers take, at the start of the call, That individual is crying, is visibly distressed. You can hear that from the nuances of the voice and the breathing and stuff like that. And you often find that just 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour of talking can bring a degree of stability and restore their faith in themselves and help with giving some self-reflection and they sound calmer.
Presumably it's, I know it's anonymous, you don't know who you're talking to. Would a caller who presumably might form quite an attachment to you as a caller, if you've helped them, can they ring back and carry on talking to you, or would they call back and always speak to somebody different?
They'd always speak to somebody different. The Samaritan's model, if you like, is that you speak to a volunteer in a branch in Crewe or a branch in London or a branch in Edinburgh, and that volunteer will offer the same service, will have that dialogue, that conversation with you, so you shouldn't need to actually get back to a particular caller. What we sometimes do is we can offer a follow-up call, so we can actually offer to speak to a volunteer within our branch at a certain time that suits that individual a few days afterwards. But generally speaking, we wouldn't look to sort of establish a relationship with a particular with a particular caller. Sometimes we have to manage the frequency of calls. We get people who can call very, very frequently, and we do have processes and protocols in place to manage that. So we want to avoid it. We want to avoid dependency. We want to avoid the people who, who just phone us 10 times a day. So we do have procedures in place to try and manage that kind of call volume. But generally speaking, many calls are people who never phoned us before. We get about 6 million contacts a year in Samaritans, emails and calls. And it's often people who've never contacted us, or people who maybe contact us, once, twice a month or a week. So they're all different, really, in that respect.
I know Liz was asking you about lockdown and how you've been managing the service, remotely and things. But have you seen any changes in numbers or the type of things that people are calling you about at the moment?
Absolutely. So COVID is a stressor for people in several different ways. Firstly, people who have underlying health problems like or mental health issues like anxiety, that the COVID has aggravated those conditions significantly.
Yeah.
I think it's also impacted on people in terms of the disruption to their lives. It's impacted in terms of not being able to see friends and family. People who are anxious, are thinking, "What am I going to catch COVID? Am I going to get out? Am I going to get out of this? Am I going to stay safe and well?" And it's also impacted on people in terms of financially. Fortunately, many people have lost their jobs or are struggling financially because of COVID, and that has an impact on them as well. So there's a spectrum and there's a variety of factors and drivers that can be reflected in people's conversations when they phone us around COVID, around the anxiety, the worry, the financial impact, the emotional impact, the social isolation, not being able to carry out activities, not being able to do things socially, not being able to carry out sporting activities, not being able to go to work. So imagine people who say they have good mental health. A lot of those people have found the lockdown a major inconvenience, to put it mildly. So somebody who's already has underlying mental health conditions, that has a huge impact as well on those.
Term underlying mental health is quite an interesting term, because for a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there that have got underlying, it doesn't come to the surface, they deal with it. It's whether it's stresses or anxiety, whatever, it's very much underlying, and it's just these little things that are coming up nowadays that are tipping people over the edge, and suddenly what they deal with, and they deal with a lot in their lives, is coming to a head, and that underlying is coming to the surface.
Absolutely. And if you think about children, people studying at school, you were talking earlier about how the digital solution to learning, laptops going through Teams and Office 365. If you have kids, there are many people who can't afford laptops, so those kind of children who haven't got access to that kind of those resources and that kind of IT are falling behind. And we take calls from people who are really struggling with the children, with keeping the children busy. Imagine the impact on a child who can't see his friends, who can't basically go in and do his or her exams. So yes, it's impacted on people in so many different ways.
Those people, that are you able to signpost people through conversation? Yes. So you can put them in touch with people that can then help further.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Signposting is something that we do in Samaritan. So basically, as I said, we are a listening service. Okay, we don't provide what I would call specialist advice or support. So typically, we have a list of organisations that we can signpost our callers to. I'll give you some examples. Mind. So Mind, of course, have got their own dedicated helpline for people who have mental health issues. Cruise, people who are suffering from bereavement. Mm-hmm. Silver Line, for older people. Mm-hmm. Citizens Advice Bureau.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because we often get calls from people who have actually got quite practical challenges in their lives.
Mm.
You know, it could be financial, it could be debt. It could be that they want accommodation from a local authority. It could be that they've been discharged from hospital and they've got nowhere to live. And we're almost like the bottom safety net for those individuals because they have nobody else to turn to. If you think about people with mental health issues, they have community psychiatric nurses. They have crisis teams, but they're severely overstretched. And often there's nobody to speak to at a weekend, for instance. So we'll try and help those individuals, and we'll signpost to those specialist agencies that I talked about. So we have signposting to organisations that deal with people who've been abused as children, as I said, bereavement, debt, alcoholism, drugs, all those kind of things, because we do recognise that those organisations can provide targeted specialist advice and support and guidance that we perhaps can't provide. We are essentially a listening service, and we provide emotional support, but we do try and signpost. And Childline, of course, as well.
Yeah.
You know, if a child phones us, they're under the age of 16, you know, we can encourage them to engage with that organisation. And Samaritans also have their own signposting policies. So a child or a vulnerable adult where we think there's imminent physical danger from a third party, and where they provide us with identifying information, we can try and get in touch with emergency services under certain circumstances, but it's quite a focused process. So yes, we can and will signpost to other organisations depending on the nature of the call and what the individual's needs are.
I know you've been volunteering at Samaritans for 7 years, and from what you've talked about there, you have, you know, your understanding about the whole service and the national service that you provide is very good. But just tell us a little bit more about the different things that you've done at Samaritans as a volunteer. Kind of, if somebody wanted to volunteer for Samaritans, how would they go about it?
Basically, I'm a listening volunteer myself, so I do three shifts a month. I've also been a treasurer of the Samaritans, so I was responsible for just maintaining financial records, income and expenditure, that kind of thing, paying our suppliers. I'm also a mentor, so I've mentored other volunteers who are coming through the training process, and of course my current role as a fundraiser. So the great thing about Samaritans' involvement in a branch is that you can do as much or as little as you want. So the minimum expectation as a Samaritan volunteer is you do three duties a month. But you can also get involved in other activities. With regards to your question about wanting to volunteer, that's easy. Basically, if you go to the Main Samaritans website, there is a volunteering link. And basically the way it works is that you go through that online portal, find out what the nearest branch is. And we hold information evenings about regularly, every couple of months or so. The COVID impact has meant that face-to-face information evenings and selection is obviously not an option for us, so we do it digitally. Through an information evening, if you feel that it's something for you, we'll then have an informal interview process, because it has to be a two-way thing. You know, that individual has to want to work and be a Samaritans volunteer, but we also have to feel that there's a fit there. And then if that is successful, then there's a full training program, which is kind of digital training with skills practice, you know, learning out about how to be a volunteer, how to take calls, how to manage calls, various aspects of Samaritans operations. So we have a fairly involved, structured training process that we operate across all our branches. So the first step would be to go online, go onto the Main Samaritans website, how to volunteer with us. And then we have an electronic registration system, and then our recruitment lead within our branch will then contact those individuals and arrange an informal chat, and then take it from there.
I know you said that people can get involved and do as much or as little as they wanted, but a minimum would be, you said something about two duties. So how much time would the training take? And then when you talk about duties, how many hours would that be? And how many hours do you do? Because it sounds like you have lots of different kind of roles at Samaritans.
Okay, so the training, I mean, I did my training 6 years ago, and it was about around about 6 months training, and okay. It was around about 10 or 12 different modules, all done face-to-face. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with the COVID situation, that's slightly different. So the training effectively is delivered digitally through sort of 2 or 3 hours worth of training, where you work, where you're in a virtual network with other volunteers, and it's a mixture of skills practice and also just finding out more about Samaritan's operations. And then you are a probationer, so when you're a new Samaritan, you do the training and you also get exposed to actually taking calls. Yeah. So the way that would work in practice is that we would throw people in at the deep end, because psychologically, one of the most difficult journey in the training journey, one of the most difficult things to do is to go from actually doing skills practice where you're reading off a script in the volunteer setting to actually taking your first call. That's mm-hmm. always, psychologically and mentally, that's always a big step.
I'm sure it is.
As you can imagine, and sometimes they can get quite anxious. So basically, they would start listening to other volunteers taking calls to get a feel for how you manage calls, get a feel for the kind of calls we deal with. How you manage that dialogue, how you manage that conversation. And then when they feel ready, and it's only when they feel ready, they would then start taking calls. And then we have a skills competency framework, and our volunteers have to pass various elements of that. And then once that's happened, they then sort of fully fledged volunteers. And then the expectation would be doing 3 shifts a month. So a typical shift, for instance, in our branch would be 10 o'clock at night to 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I do a shift on a Saturday morning because I get up early. I'm a lark rather than night owl, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. So really those shifts are in 3 or 4 hour blocks mm-hmm. Throughout the week. And the expectation is you do two or three of those. We ask our volunteers to try and do one overnight shift, one unsociable hours shift a month. So that could either be a 10 to 2 a.m., for instance, on a working, during the week, or alternatively, an early Saturday shift. Mm-hmm. Because of my own personal circumstances, because I work full time, I do Saturday mornings because that suits me. So mm-hmm. with Samaritans, we will always try and accommodate people's domestic and work commitments. Many of our volunteers work full time or have young families. So we will always try and work around those commitments when we organise our rota.
When you said the training takes 6 months, so I know you said you did yours a while ago, but like, would that be 6 months and it would be like a day a week or so many modular. Hours a week?
Yeah, basically, typically it would be maybe 3 hours during the week or maybe 3 hours on a Saturday or something like that. So it's kind of chunked. So you would do sort of every other week or every week. I'm a bit rusty, to be honest, because it's been quite a while since I did my training. But that's kind of the concept. You do discrete modules where you learn about managing calls. So taking inappropriate calls. Unfortunately, for instance, we do get people who abuse the service and who make inappropriate calls or calls of a sexual nature. So in that context, we would train our volunteers on having the strategy to deal with that. Another area, for instance, is self-disclosure. So what we don't try and disclose our personal family details or circumstances, because the focus is always on the caller. So mm-hmm. so in that context, it's about learning strategies to deflect and to focus back on the caller's needs. And emails, emails is one of the two tranches of our service delivery. So there is a skill to writing a good email. Because of course, an email, you don't have the immediacy that you do with a telephone conversation. So it requires a degree of skill and knowledge about how you frame the actual the email. So there's different aspects about learning to be a volunteer and safeguarding as well. So it's modular training over kind of a 6 month period, and then towards the end of that 6 month period, you then go into the operational room and start taking calls.
Yeah, because obviously you'll have to keep yourself safe as well. I mean, as somebody who works on calls, what sort of support do you get as a volunteer?
So basically every shift that you do, we have a leader. Mm-hmm. The leader is an individual who is on call. So they are there at the beginning and the end of the call, and they are a resource for you to help with you. So if you're struggling with a particular call, if you want some advice about how to manage a call, if you want to get a bit of a help with whether there's a particular safeguarding issue and how you escalate that, then you can speak to the leader and they will provide that help. and the other volunteer, you know. So normally shift there'll be two volunteers. So the reason for having two people is, well, first of all, health and safety, and secondly, because it gives both volunteers an opportunity to talk about their experiences on that duty. If they had a particularly challenging or emotionally draining call, they can talk about it at the end of the shift to the fellow volunteer and also to the leader. I'm a leader myself, and I have on occasions had volunteers phoning me afterwards, you know, because they had a particularly challenging call and wanted just to talk through it with somebody.
So Simon, I know that with the year being the way it is, that fundraising and funds coming into your charity, because you have an awful lot of volunteers there, it's probably not being as generous as it has been in previous years. So have you got any fundraising stuff going on at the moment people can take part in, or what could people do if they wanted to raise money for Samaritans?
Okay, basically there are several different ways that you can contribute to Samaritans and to our particular branch. The easiest way to do that will be to pay a bank transfer digitally into our account. So we have our own dedicated account, and that's with the cooperative bank. And the sort code is 089299. And the account number is 658267666. So anybody who wants to pay direct to our branch can do that through a bank transfer. We also have a Virgin Money Giving site. So basically, if you were to Google into the internet Virgin Money Giving, and then when the search engine comes up, Samaritans of South Cheshire, then our donation portal comes up. And basically that gives people an opportunity to pay a one-off payment or to set up a direct debit. And also there's a gift aid facility as well. People can pay us checks payable to Samaritans of South Cheshire, posted to 2 Hall O'Shore Street. And that's crew CW14AE. And we'll even, the old fashioned way, we'll even take cash. But obviously that means that somebody's got to actually get the money, collect the money and bank it. Mm-hmm. So there are all those different ways to make a donation. If somebody has a great fundraising idea and wants to talk about it with us, then they can come and speak to me. Contact me, simon.kaufman@btinternet.com, and I'm more than happy to speak to those individuals. You know, we're always looking for new ways of fundraising. Our plans at the moment are to go much more down the digital route. And what I'd like to do is to do more business engagement. There's lots of local businesses. There's lots of business networks, Rotary Club in the South Cheshire area. And we'd really like to engage with those organisations, because, you know, lots of businesses have got mental health policies and HR functions, and we can see how we can add value to those organisations by promoting the work of Samaritans, signposting the work of Samaritans. And also you can apply for grants. We've applied for grants from a number of local authorities successfully to help with our refurbishment and our capital expenditure. So basically there are a number of routes that people can use to pay us to help, because it costs us about £1,000 a month just to keep going, to pay for our overhead. So we do, obviously every penny counts. And in the current situation, our traditional fundraising, you know, tin rattling, we used to do that in Nantwich, in Crewe, in Sandbach. Because of the current situation, we haven't unfortunately been able to do that. So it's very much looking at alternative avenues for fundraising.
Simon, we always ask our guests, because this is the Happiness Hub, so we focus on a lot about people with problems that are contacting you because they've got problems and challenges. But we want to know what makes you happy and what you do to get yourself to a happy, positive state. So do you want to share those thoughts with our listeners?
So I thought about that. So what makes me happy? A nice walk in the countryside with the family, getting fresh air into my lungs, followed by a nice roast dinner, watching a relaxing film, and reading a good book. The simple things
in life. Nice day mapped out, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I'd say we, the vast majority of people have said getting outside and doing exercise of some description. I think it might be the first that's directly followed it up with a roast dinner.
Absolutely.
We all love a roast dinner.
Yeah,
of course you do. My goose fat roast potatoes are to die for, apparently. Homemade gravy. So, I mean, the simple things in life, you know, spending time with the family and refocusing away from the anxieties and worries of life at the moment.
Yeah,
definitely. Simon, I'm just getting back into my reading this year. What kind of books do you like to read, and what have you got a recommendation?
So I actually run a book club outside Samaritans. So the one that we've just read at the moment is The Catch which is a thriller about a man who's engaged to a woman, and the father of the fiance has suspicions about the man and then does some background checks. So that was a that was really sort of exciting kind of book. So that would be
that sounds like a page turner.
It was a page turner. Some of our guys read it in about 2 days. I'm also looking to buy and read The Mirror and the Light, the latest Hilary Mantel trilogy about Thomas Cromwell, which is Wolf Hall, and then the sequel to that. So yeah, I do like to do a bit of reading.
Mysterious stuff, that sounds, the Thomas Cromwell stuff.
Yeah.
So, Simon, before you go, just remind people, if they needed to get in touch with Samaritans, how they could do that.
Yeah, so free phone 116 123, and that number is free on any landline or any mobile in the UK and Ireland. And you can ring that number 24/7. Alternatively, email Joe, that's J-O, lowercase, at samaritans.org.
Why is it Joe? Is there a reason behind that?
So basically, there isn't. When we write emails, all emails automatically finish with Joe, J-O. And it's kind of, it's just something that was agreed. It's a neutral anonymous name. So when I write an email, I wouldn't sign off Simon. You know, I'd just say joe@samaritans.org, and it's automatically generated. It's part of our branding.
J-O, was it J-O-E?
J-O, okay. Yes.
Okay. Right, Liz, we normally do homework. I think our homework this week should be to go out for a long walk, have a roast dinner and read a good book.
Yeah, you go out for a walk. I'll
you have the roast dinner.
Seriously, though, I did so much walking over Christmas week because I did a little bit of work, but I did a lot of walking. But this week, I've been back at work, and oh my goodness me, I've got to like 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. Thought, crikey, if I don't get out quick, it's going to be dark. And it's easy to just let the day whiz by when you're sat on the computer all day. So, yeah, I do need to make sure that is up there as one of the first jobs of the day instead of one of the last jobs of the day.
Very good. Yeah, you do need to make that time. So thank you ever so much, Simon, for making the time out of your very busy schedule, by the sounds of it, all the volunteering, you're working full time, running a book club, looking after teenage kids and all of that stuff.
That's okay. Thank you for having me, Liz Kedron. It's been really nice to meet you. And yeah, if anybody wants to find out more about work, volunteering for Samaritans, then they can, you know, they can contact us through the web portal. And as I said, anybody wants to talk about fundraising, then please drop me an email and I'm happy to talk with those individuals.
And Simon, if you drop us a message back with those bank details again, we'll pop those in the show notes so that any links to your fundraising pages and things. So drop Kedron an email and we'll make sure that's published with the podcast.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Simon.
Take care.
Cheers. Right, bye.
You're listening to The Happiness Hub, part of the Redshift Community Podcast Network, with me, Liz Parkin.
And me, Kedron Elliott. Every episode, we'll share top tips on how to get happy and stay happy. So listen in, get involved and be happy.